Hello and welcome to the New Zealand podcast. Our vision is to explore how we create a new global system, a new ism, where all forms of life can thrive within the means of our planet. It's so important that young people are at the front and centre of the conversations we have around this topic, as they will be the leaders of the future that we're looking to create. We are therefore delighted to welcome three changemakers who are already creating impact and acting positively, thinking constructively about the issues that we face. Their names are Katarina Hansi of Cleantech, Estonia. We've got Melanie Marcel of So Science, and we've got Karen Orr Rosner of Ray of Impact. And we're really, really happy to have them on the podcast. It's such a delight to have them here and an honor. And we're really looking forward to talking to them about how our lifestyles need to change in a new ism. So welcome to all three of you. First of all, we'd love to hear more about what you do and the work that you're doing. Katarina, perhaps we can start with you. Could you share a little about yourself, your work, and your vision for the future?
Sure. Thank you very much, Alexandra and Mel, for having me here today. So what I'm doing currently, I'm working at Cleantech Estonia as a project manager, and I'm dealing with projects that aim to raise awareness about climate change, climate action and leadership, and about entrepreneurship and innovation. So I'm mostly dealing with young people that want to shape the future, and they want to create a vision, a sustainable future for everyone, that everybody can actually still be on Earth in any kind of format, human, animal, plants, everyone. And besides that, I'm working as an educator for social entrepreneurship and education for sustainable development, and help people to get more conscious related with their habits and everyday life and their lifestyle. And my vision for the future, I could say that is that everyone can live the life that they want to live with respecting themselves and the people around them and whatever it exists around them in harmony. So that could be a nice introduction from my side. And thanks again for having me here. I'm so excited with what is going to happen and what we're going to discuss today.
Thank you, Katarina. That's great. We're really, really excited to see what emerges today as well. Melanie, perhaps you could do your introduction next.
Hi, everyone, and thank you very much for having me. So I'm Melanie Marcel, the founder of So Science, which is a social company, social enterprise, specialized in responsible research and innovation. So I was trained as a scientist, and at some point in my career, I really asked myself the question of what am I doing with all my knowledge and all my skills? Science is an extremely powerful tool, but I was really asking myself the question of the scientific system I was working in and how this was impacting the world and the environment. And so Science is really a company that is specialized in trying to change the scientific system and what we produce inside of laboratories and all the technical objects in order to have a positive impact on the planet. And so it's a very different way of doing research, basically. And we are expert in having around the table very diverse people. So you will have, of course, the classic actors like scientists, researchers, some industrials or very professional actors like that, but we also introduce in the research process NGOs, citizens, social enterprises. And so it's a totally different way of viewing the production of knowledge somehow. And so what is my vision of the future? It would be basically a place where, as a citizen, we could all be a part of the conversation and decide what will be the technical objects that are part of our everyday life and be able to steer their impact on the world.
That's great, Melanie. Thank you so much, and so good to hear about what you're doing. Thank you. And Karen Orr, we'd love to hear a little about you and your vision. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. So it's a pleasure to be here with a female leadership, and I'm really excited about that. I'm Karen Orosner, and my business, Ray of Impact, is connecting businesses to nature and to human nature. What does it actually mean? Is shifting capital into doing good using financial methodologies and outcome-based strategies in order for us to know how our inputs and activities that we usually do in everyday business actually perform. And how do we know, how do we quantify using data to actually avoid doing harm in order to actually maximize growth and profits while minimizing risk. And my story began when I was kind of asking myself how to promote well-being. And I did a lot of work in doing work with Japan and rehabilitation and elderly care. I have also a personal background. I have a disability of my own, which kind of made me connected into well-being. And as time went by, I also lived and had the privilege to grow up in nature. So how do I connect the dots? And this question kind of arose in my mind. After working a lot with social and health and rehabilitation well-being tech, studied climate and innovation tech. And currently my passion is to connect the dots between climate and social justice. I think the things are totally correlated and interconnected. And many businesses use products that are, for example, SaaS or doing well or health, but still they have an environmental impact, or vice versa, they're social, yet they do have an environmental footprint. Even if they're not solving a societal or environmental problem, for example, if they're cyber as well, and how can they be accountable for their environment? So that's what I do, and that's my passion, translating their actions and their impact into financial outcomes so that we can avoid greenwashing and actually know that we're promoting impact.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Thank you. And the three of you, the work that you do is just, it's kind of the perfect symbiosis of bringing together people and planet and the things that we need in order to create a newism. So we're just really pleased to have you all here. And I'm really excited for one to hear about to hear the conversation that you're about to have with Mel. So with no further ado, I will hand over to him, and I'm looking forward to sitting back and hearing some great thoughts. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex. And it's fantastic to meet all three of you, but also really to hear about the work that you're doing and the visions you have for the world in the future. One of the things our generation, and I'm slightly older, we have a kind of feeling that we've made a bit of a mess of the world, or our generation and generations before. And so at Newism, what we want to talk about all the time is positive. We don't want to concentrate on what's wrong. We want to try and concentrate on what's right, what's the future. And in particular for young people, because it's the world you're inheriting, and therefore it's the world that you can change. So really what we want to chat to you about today around the whole issue of lifestyle is positive stories and positive planning for the future that can change the world for the better and achieve the visions that you're all talking about, and which are fantastic. So maybe just in the terms of lifestyle, if I was to just ask first of all to Katharina, one of the things going forward will be that we have to all change our lifestyles. So we have to do things like not travel in cars so much. We have to change our eating habits, perhaps. We have to stop traveling the world to go on holiday, perhaps. How do you think we can convince, or you can convince, the general population that we have to make these changes in order to save the planet? How difficult do you think it is, given that people get into their habits? And this is always the habit, so they always get in the car and they always go on holiday. What is it that it's going to take to get the general population to understand that they're going to have to change their lifestyles in order to achieve the visions that you're outlining?
That is a great question, Mel. Thank you very much. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to start with that question, because this was, I could say, my main concern or main question mark when I started my sustainability journey personally. And when I realized that the efforts that I put to make my life more sustainable doesn't mean that the people around me are doing the same. And this was quite frustrating, especially when you realize what is the danger or what is the outcome and why you do this. And the other are like, I will not do it. It's like, why? This was getting so frustrating. Firstly, I would like to mention what you said about the previous generations and our current generations. I think the first thing that we have to address is to understand what we have brought in the world. Like today, we are so much dependent on plastic, but the two generations ago, basically plastic wasn't existing in the same way that we know it today. And we have to reflect and see how we used to do things, or what we call the peasant nutrition, that was not based on meat and it was based on vegetables and whatever we had in our gardens or whatever we were producing. How from that we changed and we shifted to have everyday meat meals. And I have a conversation with people from different cultures, and they're like, yes, in my culture, meat is traditional. In my culture, meat is traditional. It's like, how long is that tradition actually? Because two generations before, people were eating meat in very, very rare occasions. So the one thing I could say is the same symbiosis between the young generations and what we bring to the world, technology, how to use these gadgets, but also to reflect in the back and take from the previous generations, as long as they are with us, what they used to do and how they were saving their CO2 emissions without knowing that they were doing that. And something that comes from human reaction to things, and we cannot unfortunately change that because it's our physiology, is that we don't respond to a danger that is not urgent. So when we were living in the caves and we were feeling that the tiger is coming, then you understand that you're in danger. But when we say that after 20 years, the planet will not exist, we cannot understand that. So the first is that to understand that you have to communicate things as a climate emergency, but still humans cannot understand what does it mean. And we have to understand how that affects our lives and that we can do things differently. In climate change communication and changing the lifestyles, I think the most important thing is to understand the identity and the values that people are holding and how to offer them something that responds to their values. So the shifting from traveling to work, going to work by car or something else, needs to be presented in a way that is beneficial for the user. And this user is accepted from his or her society. Because we still believe that people who are more sustainable lifestyle, the hippies who are living in the forests and dancing all the time and stuff, but it's not anymore like that. It's a matter of survival. And we have to understand it in the terms that capitalism talks and the current lifestyle talks.
Okay, so that's really fascinating what you're saying. I mean, you're not talking about going back in time, but you're talking about learning from the way we used to live before, I guess, industrialization took over and we plowed ahead without thinking about the consequences. What you're talking about is we need to learn about the consequences of our actions going forward, understand that to be sustainable. And you're also talking about really getting people to think about the long term rather than the short term. And maybe your generation understands that issue about the long term. Do you think that that's right? I mean, I hear what you're saying about the hippie versus the kind of non-hippie image of climate change activists and so on. But leaving that aside, do you have the impression that your generation, people you know, have the ability to think in the long term? Because I think we're still, as a human race, we're still, although the tiger's not at the door, we're still quite, you know, reactive, rather than thinking ahead. But what about your generation? What's your sense?
I think I'm gonna be positive and optimistic for the future, because that's actually what brings us hope. And the pressure that after what we saw thing with COVID that nobody was expecting is that all of us need to have a part of responsibility, but not in creating the impact, that we have negative impact to the planet, and we have to take care of that, because of course big corporations have much bigger responsibility, but we have to take action if we want to survive. And it's all the same happening with COVID, in the sense that of course governments need to take action and international institutions need to take action, but I need to protect myself and I need to protect my loved ones and my community. So in that sense, I believe that that's contributed also to understand that together we can achieve more and each one of us can participate in this. And so then the pressure that we have put also in the governments, into the private sector, to actually start taking action about these things. We cannot anymore just give promises, long-term promises and fake promises. We just need to start having results.
Okay, thank you. That's very interesting. I think a lot of people would agree with that. And it would appear that the private sector, the big corporations, do seem to be making the right noises anyway. Some of them may be acting, but it's a question of holding them to account, because they do have real power, as you say. But maybe if I could ask Melanie, a lot of politicians have said to do with the pandemic, to Katrina's point there about the COVID issue, is that, as soon as possible, we return to normal. And normal means traffic jams and pollution and so on and so forth. And maybe there's been a lost opportunity here, whereas actually you might have said, well, COVID's happened, and as Katerina says, there was some positives that might emerge out of that, and we might have been going a different way. Now, so you're a scientist, as you articulated, and it's fascinating what you're doing now. Do you think we in terms of the type of research that you're doing, can learn out of COVID and go in a new way? Or is it just people are just going, no, we just have to survive and just return to where we were before? What's your view? I'd be really interested in your taking this from your perspective.
Yeah, I think the really interesting point here is, as was said, human and basically all animals really act in the face of danger when it's like right there. And with COVID, that's maybe why it was such a huge opportunity, because it was right there and we had to do something. And so we indeed moved, we indeed took actions to fight against this threat, but we didn't take the real opportunity of changing our way of life and associating somehow the threat of COVID with the threat of climate change. And that's where the opportunity is missed, because it's actually what COVID did that is a great shift of mind, is that it reminded us that we are all connected, first as humans, of course, because it was transmitted and it didn't care about the frontiers. So that's something extremely interesting, but also very much connected to animals and to nature in general, because we can see that viruses basically go from animals to animals. And so if we threaten the lifestyle of animals, it will have an impact on us as humans. So I think it was a massive opportunity for changing our lifestyle and for opportunity. I believe that some could take this opportunity as individuals. For example, here in France, we have seen so many people moving places, like not living in the very urban area anymore, but decided to go live in the countryside. And so some people really took this time to think, to reflect, and to make big changes in their life. The real missed opportunity is the fact that governments and, let's say, international organizations did not take this opportunity in the same way. And it's really a problem, because I think it's really important that we all have a personal journey, or we all have a personal new way of doing things that is more sustainable. But it will not be enough. It will never be enough. What needs to change is the system, and it's mainly huge, big organizations. So it's really the way government could have changed their way of doing and they didn't do it. And one of the main reasons, I believe, is that we are stuck in the past. So we are stuck in very important ideas of employment, economic activities, all things that are really important today because they are shaping the way we live our lives. And it's true that economic opportunities are very linked to progress of humanity because that's what we've been doing for 50 years. And that's how we've lived our lives. And there is this sentence that I really like, and I think we really need to embrace it, which says, we need to meet the past with the present. And it's basically exactly what Katerina was saying. We are living today, we're living in the present, but if we want to really see changes in the future, we need to meet the past with the present. We need to be able to see and to understand and to recognize what we were doing in the past, how it worked, why it worked also differently, maybe in the last 50, 70 years, and how we can now do differently. And this is all the conversation we need to have. And I love what Katerina said about traditions. We should really dig into that and not be afraid of changing them or embracing maybe ones that we had before.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you say. I'd like to ask you just about from a science point of view, what role science can play. Science has obviously shot up the agenda in terms of tackling this COVID. Everyone's talking about scientists and you know, politicians saying we follow the science and so on. And obviously a lot of research has been done and money's gone into it. But it's very interested in the work that you do where you're saying that actually research around science should be done in a different way. So looking at the wider community, talking with thinking about the impacts in the wider community. So if politicians are possibly failing and not getting it, and if big corporations are being too slow, do you think science or scientists could provide a lead in terms of what you're talking about to create this more sustainable world that we want?
That's an extremely interesting question. Related to COVID, that's also another missed opportunity, I think, because so many things happened in the laboratories with this COVID crisis. And that would have been a huge opportunity to show the world and the citizens basically what is science about and how does that work? What's going on in the lab when we discover a new virus and when we try to search for a vaccine and et cetera and et cetera. And it's not something that was done. And I think it's true that the politicians mainly use it to say we are following some guidelines. Like the scientists say that and we're doing it and that's all. And it's a shame because science is extremely complicated and it's changing every day, especially on a topic that is just emerging. So it would have been so much more interesting if we have been following like the science day to day, but with humility and understanding how the scientists are actually making their choice. Why maybe yesterday they did something and today it's not true anymore and stuff like that. And that's a missed opportunity. But to go back to sustainability, here we can see the role of science in the very strange role science has, because scientists were basically the one that warned us first about climate change. And this is scientific data and saying there is a problem. We can see that there is a problem. We are sure there is a problem and we need to act. And for a very long time, scientists and science in general stopped there, this kind of warning. And then the policymakers have to do something about it. And so it's really create knowledge somewhere in academia, knowledge is created, and then maybe policymaker can use it, or maybe companies can use it. And there is this kind of very precise role of who is supposed to act, who is supposed to create knowledge, and who is supposed to follow, which is basically the citizens. And what we are thinking with science is that we need to really reshuffle the roles. And of course, scientists can create knowledge, But they're not the only one, because you have a lot of knowledge that is created by people experiencing stuff. So if we go back to COVID, for example, it's extremely interesting to look how people that live between urban areas and forest are actually interacting with animals, because then you can understand better how the zoonoses can happen. And so you see that there is a, some sort of knowledge that exists outside of the laboratory, and it's an interesting knowledge, and scientists can also be interested in that. So we have to understand that knowledge can be created everywhere, but we also have to understand that scientists should act. They should not just say, I'm creating the knowledge, and then policymakers have to do something. Scientists are also citizens, and they also have issues, personal issues of sustainability, of how to live in this planet with ethics, or how to do my job, basically, and be a good human. And so these different roles, creating knowledge, acting, taking decisions, we should not separate them. We should have everyone participating in the conversation, and scientists, citizens, policymakers at the same table, basically, and saying, this is the knowledge we have, that's how we want to act, and we are all doing to do it together, basically.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for those insights. Turning to you, Karen Orr, I remember, and linked to this many years ago, I visited some farmers in the mountains in Bolivia. And they were very poor, but they it was all about for them creating a fair world. And top of their agenda was nature. In fact, they used to do kind of small sacrifices to nature. Nature was connected into everything that they did. And for those of us who were visiting, who were urbanites, if you like, it we could see how far removed we'd come from nature. So just kind of building then on Melanie's point about kind of learning. Because initially when we went there, we thought we had some answers for them, but actually they had answers for us. And it was a question of us learning from one another and building that knowledge base. So given the work that you do and, you know, a fabulous understanding of that connection, I'd just be interested in your view about how much we should connect back to nature, therefore in terms of our lifestyles. We need to stop consuming as much as we do. And if we stop consuming as much as we do, that's going to have an impact potentially on the economy as currently structured. So how do we reconcile all of this together, the understanding, your understanding of nature, the Bolivian farmers, if you like, and our actually all of us over consuming?
Thank you. That's a great question. And to be honest, I think the answer was mentioned here by Melanie and Katarina as well. As I see it, first of all, the main thing that fascinates me about nature is its ability to have a systemic way. It's an ecosystem. So that's why I think we need all of us, all of the players. We need scientists. We need NGOs, we need governments, we need citizens. And my passion is the finance and business sector. And I think my focus and a lot of focus should be in creating the incentives is from the business side. Because as was mentioned here, science already knew 30 years back that we are going on the race to global warming. Yet there were no listening on the other side. And I think today, during COVID and other global crises, it's very clear. And also the scientists basically also raised the volume. And instead of saying it like in a yellow alert, they increased it into red code alert. And now it's very clear. We have 9 years to cut down global emissions by half until 2030. And as much as each citizen is important, and I do live my life personally in the most sustainable way that I can, I think that the main emissions and the main responsible and accountable are businesses. And currently we are not only on the road to decrease the emissions. We're basically doing current activities, we are 16% positive to increase global emissions until 2030. And what's shifting me, and in my answering your question, what can we learn from nature is, first of all, I think we need to learn how to work together in cooperation, in partnership, leveraging each other's work. Instead of working in silos, we need to work together, sharing knowledge, learning from one another, of course, from our past, but connecting to what I do, learning from the past based on outcomes. For example, we used to have as pickers, we used to pick this this fruit, but after seeing our ancestors died from this fruit, we learned that it's non-edible. So exactly in that way, again, or farmers in Bolivia, we can learn from our activities and make changes. And in my sense, there's a lot of optimism in people like us, in change makers, as well as in climate innovation and in climate technology. And currently we need $1.5 to $3 trillion a year to achieve climate goals by scientists. So my position or my take on this is working with financial institutions, investors, and businesses to quantify their emissions or their social policy, because I think the main problem here is not what we need to stop, is how we need to move forward. And most of the discourse is, what do we need to stop? We need to stop emissions, we need to stop transportation, we need to stop eating this and that. But the thing is that even polluters, most of them, don't mean to pollute. They are in a kind of a momentum of, we got to how we got here because of fossil fuels. 100 years ago, people with disabilities, for example, or women or people from the periphery would not have lived if it weren't for fossil fuels. So I'm not saying they're good. I'm just saying we need to acknowledge that things are complex. They're not good and bad. They brought us here. And now we need to shift, and we need everybody to do so. And we need to think also about the economical incentives, because in order to change infrastructure, we do have all the infrastructure, we have the innovation, but we need to think about economic incentives and how to incentivize our businesses, our corporates. And for that, we need the public. As we saw Greta and the younger generations, they had a lot of impact during COVID on businesses and on financial institutions. And today, ESG and sustainability is becoming much more acquainted and normalized in the business world, but we do have a lot more work to do. So, yeah.
Okay. So I love your optimism. And I think a lot of people would agree, we need to tackle the business sector, and the business sector needs to become more responsible. And a lot in the business sector would say they are, but you mentioned there it's about kind of the system. And part of the problem with the system we have at the moment is that businesses are rewarded for growth, rewarded for profit associated with that growth. But the kind of problem is the world is a finite size, so you can't keep on growing. So they keep producing more and more. So whilst they might be more responsible in, say, not using fossil fuels, they're still potentially producing more. So in terms of our lifestyles, do we all not need to understand that we need to be rewarding businesses that actually maybe are producing less or growing slower or contracting? Because actually that's in all of our interests to do that. And that requires quite a bit of a cultural shift, a change in the way we live our lives and in terms of our understanding about the role of business. So business can still be very innovative, very enterprising, very creative, et cetera, and do good for humanity. But how do we change that system that just stops continuously rewarding growth and increased profit?
That's a main question I'm dealing with, how to create systemic change. But I'll go back into science, and for that we also have answers. Already in 2009, John Rockstrom and Stefan defined 9 planetary boundaries that will create a safe space, operating space for humanity. And they include climate change and biosphere and land use and system use and fresh water and ocean, et cetera, the environmental boundaries. So when we define growth and economic growth, we need, and some businesses already are taking in consideration of those 9 planetary boundaries yet. They don't relate to social boundaries. So for that, we have another kind of a shift for that, which is the donut economy in 2012 by Kate Redworth. And there are already businesses today, mainly EU, as well as in Holland, that are working with these models. And I'm sure that most of you know, but some of you, we can shift into, if we have time, examples, maybe follow on. But there are businesses that are defining growth differently. And I think the problem is not growth, and the problem is not financial growth. The problem is, how do you grow in correlation with nature and with society? And for that, as I mentioned in the past, you need to define your KPIs. How do you impact society and environment? And how do you know that you actually don't harm them, or you do the minimum to harm them? And take this into consideration business-wise. So for example, this is what I do. And if we talk about company that would, for example, she's a SaaS company, software as a service company, which are a lot of them today. And their main product is servers, but yet they would think about economic growth. But today, technology is already innovative enough to have servers that are run by clean energy. So they could choose not to invest, or actually divest their investments gradually from polluting resources of non-clean energy. But I think to your question, first of all, yes, system has to define limits to growth. Regulations have to create taxes for pollution. We all know that regulation is the main catalyst, and EU has already begun on this last April with the taxonomy and other things that are going on, which will gradually become popular in US as well. But first of all, I think we need to measure in order for us to know what are we doing.
Okay, fascinating. I mean, the three of you are both kind of starting to draw out the possibilities of what the kind of newism might be in this kind of area. I mean, already we're kind of getting near our kind of time, but I maybe just come back to you, Katharina, on Karnor's point there. Everyone needs to be working together on this, so the role of government becomes quite important, and therefore, you know, tax incentives to or new regulations are very important to be kind of connected in with this. Is your experience so far that governments are up for this, are beginning to wake up to this, or do you think that they, in future, as a future newism, if you like, are governments actually going to have a smaller role, and it's more about the business sector that will wake up to this, and us as individuals, our lifestyles? Where do you think governments are at the moment in this debate, in this area?
That's a question that I have again by myself for years. Like when I was studying my bachelor in Greece about social policy, what I was finding out is that the way that I have been taught at school about what government is, but how government works and how it will be in the future, in my generation start changing, in the sense that year by year, governments are getting the national governments, they get more and more weak regarding their ability to decide of what is going to happen. And businesses are getting bigger and bigger and have bigger saying, together with international institutions. In Europe, I'm not so aware, but I was very surprised with the TTIP agreement between US and Canada and how much power actually businesses can have. And then you have the ethical part that is not bad. It's not, it doesn't harm us if businesses have a bigger saying on what we're doing and what policies are happening. The problem is that businesses are working with the main basic goal, which is to make profit and to increase their profits. So even though they invest their profits to do something good, is what good they actually do? Do they try through, for instance, CSR policies, that they are trying to actually expand their client base future-wise and at the same time reduce the harm that they do to the environment and the society? But again, is on the discretion of the people, of the heads, let's say, that are in each company, that they're working for specific benefits and specific firms. So from the one hand, personally, I would say that yes, I would like more to have more strong governments that are working for the most socially vulnerable people that are not in businesses, are not representative businesses. Of course, diversity is getting more and more ground into the businesses, but it's not the same. I used to work with vulnerable social population in Greece, in Denmark, in Estonia, and in Malawi. And then when I came back to Estonia and I started working with businesses, I saw that people who are in that sector, in the private sector, do not have any idea about what is happening outside of the private sector. And somebody, it should be someone that takes into consideration these people and include also these people. The same with nature, because I think we tend to forget that besides humans, there are so many other living beings around us that they support our existence, but we don't realize that. And we tend to don't include them in the conversation. I think what Melanie brought about co-creation and having a saying on what is happening is quite important. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I think that mostly governments are getting smaller and smaller. Businesses have a bigger saying, and it's very important to be held accountable and monitor what they decide, what they do. And academia needs to be there as well in reshaping the sense of capitalism that we have. Is it only profit just in terms of money? But because for me, it could be also profit in terms of life, because climate change has reached to a point that we are not sure if we're going to survive or not after 20 years. So what you will do, even though you have the millions or billions of the world, if you cannot actually live? Neither you, neither your next generations, the upcoming generations.
Thank you. So, Melanie, we're concluding there that co-creation, you mentioned this before, getting out of silos, very important, maybe different roles for government, different roles for business, different roles for scientists, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to move into a new paradigm, which I don't think we're there yet. So economists will talk about the current system and how you might improve it a bit, rather than trying to create a completely new system. Do you think we need to create a new system, which is new theory, if you like, new values, which will show us all how we live our lives automatically, so we don't automatically get in the car? Do you think that that's worthy of pursuing, or do you think it's a question of just us still tinkering around with the current system and hoping that we hit their targets in 9 years?
Yeah, definitely. I think the change we need to go through is huge. So yeah, I think we can say it's in terms of a different system. I would not say, I don't know if it's really different values, but it's actually being able to share the different values that already exist. So what Katharina just said that is quite interesting is that indeed, if you look at how a company works, the thing they value is the growth, potentially and most probably their profits in terms of economic return. it's something they value, and it's something government value too, because as we said, some growth is also linked to well-being. So it's not bad in itself, but there are other values that exist in citizens, but today they're not taken into account. So I don't think we need to invent new values really, but we need to be able to take into account different values. And also that's something that I think is really interesting, being able to discuss which values are serious or not, because that's very often it boils down to that. So we say that looking for growth or looking for profits is a very serious business, and grown-ups do that. But if you talk about joy, or if you talk about caring for each other, or if you talk about caring for animals, for example, now it's not serious at all. It's something that kids are interested in. And for me, this is where the massive change in our behavior, but also our mindset, needs to happen. What do we think is serious, and what do we think is not important, or what do we think is just a game? And for most people today, because they never thought about it, maybe, or just because it's such the world we live in, talking about economy is so serious, but talking about living with animals is not serious at all. And so this is the big shift that needs to happen. I don't think it's about inventing new values, but it's definitely about inventing a new system.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I guess maybe when I'm talking about values, I would agree it's not about inventing values, but maybe reprioritizing values in business. So words like trust, for example, or caring, or whatever, that become a values that we all as humans want to have, becomes part of what a business might look like. That might be way far off at the moment, but maybe something for the future. So Carol, just building on that, I mean, we have to kind of obviously potentially create some new measures here, because whether we like it or not, the world is kind of data obsessed at times. And so it's almost like everybody wants proof. So what do you think about some of the work you've been doing around kind of new measures or methodologies that maybe might be applied in the world of accounting, which is still very based on the bottom line?
Yeah, thank you for that question. And I would like to say that there are already existing sustainability methodologies, and I am working with ESG, which is financial materiality, as well as impact, SDG, etc. Yet those are still limited, and because they're not connected into the financial accounting system. And I would like to highlight an amazing work being done by the Harvard Business School since 2019, actually, which is called Impact Weighted Accounts. Basically, they are in line items with financial statements of companies, like income statement or balance sheets, which are added to supplement the financial statement and health performance of a company. And to that, they are adding the positive and negative impacts, such society-wise and environmental-wise, on employees, on customers, on the environment, and on the broader society. So basically, if we are talking about our coffee, usually we just pay for the coffee. But in that sense, if we would use the impact-weighted accounts framework or methodology, which is now being implemented, stewarded by leaders, by financial leaders. And if you're listening to this and you're interested, so feel free to look them up or contact me and I'll be happy to connect. But if we're talking about our coffee, then it would take in consideration also the value change and the social rights of the people producing the coffee, as well as the transportation, as well as the pollution. All of that would be considered and integrated into the price of the coffee. And then it would create a much broader financial incentive for us to change our ways and for business growth and values, etc. But yet this is already a methodology that is developed, yet now they are still looking for pioneers to create the case studies. So I'm really warmly inviting people to reach out to me or to them to contact this. And I think it starts with measurement and then management. So first of all, knowing your negative and positive, and then taking into consideration the business management. Because we are also connected here via Zoom or via internet, and we're talking globally, right? So basically it has a very positive effect because we're sharing knowledge, and knowledge is widely spread to everyone in a very open-minded level. Yet we are using electricity, which is polluting. So we need to take everything that is complex in consideration and quantify it. And of course, leaders, businesses, big institutions should be the steward for this.
Absolutely. I think it's a very good point you make generally, but just on the one on how we connect on Zoom calls or whatever internationally, I think people tend to forget actually the amount of energy that actually consumes in the process of doing it. It's a lot, and we should all be aware of that.
Absolutely.
So listen, unfortunately, we're kind of coming to the end here, because for sure I could spend all day talking to you guys. I mean, your insights are and your contributions are absolutely fabulous, let alone the work that you're doing. And I think it gives me anyway great confidence about the future of the world when I speak to three people like you and others, younger people who are actually doing things and have really concrete ideas about the future. So fabulous talking to you. So just before we wrap up though, maybe if we could ask each of you in turn, maybe going the other way around this time, you know, in 30 seconds, if you know, if you had the elevator pitch to the world, as it were, in terms of lifestyle, okay, what would your message be right at the moment? Try and do it in 30 seconds. Okay, Karen Orr, you've got 30 seconds. On you go.
Great. So my message is everything is a choice. We have a choice. And every action we do needs to be a cognitive choice. And we can create an impact if we are aware and present with our choices and curious about what's around us.
Okay, fabulous. Melanie?
I love Karen Orr's message. Maybe related to what I'm doing, I would say start thinking how you consume science, and when you do that, how can you stop consuming it, but rather being a part of it and producing scientific discoveries or technical objects, and stop being just consumer, but become real actor of what you live with.
Okay, perfect. I love that. Stop being a consumer and become an actor. Love it. Katharina, you have the last word. You have last 30 seconds.
Yes, thank you. And I will take it from where Melanie left it. Stop being consumer, start being creator. Like, reconsider the way you live according to what brings value to you, real value to you, without the ads. Like, who is actually you and what brings you happiness, what makes you happy, without feeling guilty or having second thoughts. Because sometimes we're like, okay, we will consume and we will feel happy. But then you're like, oh, why did I buy that? Or how I will use it? How can get rid of that? And invest in experiences and connection and what preserve your health, mental and physical, and in your environment and social as well, more than what someone else tells you that something brings you joy and happiness. We all know our inner voice, what makes us happy and what makes us calm and balanced.
Okay, thank you all very much. So I mean, the three of you, that's really, really positive messages, really, really great in this world when we're used to kind of getting media, which is full of negativities all the time, every 10 minutes of the day. So just hearing your voices, hearing your positivity and your enthusiasm for the future, just brilliant. Thank you very much. It's lovely speaking to you. And I'm going to hand back to Alex now. Thank you again.
Yes, I just wanted to echo Mel's words. It's been a real privilege to be able to sit here and listen to everything that you've been saying, all the ideas you have, all the, you know, all the positive actions you're already taking. There's been a lot of wisdom and a lot of optimism in this conversation. And as Mel, I think, has said already as well, and I want to say again, if, you know, the future is in the hands of people like you, then I think we can be a little bit less worried than we are at the moment, because it feels like the only way is up, and we can be guided by people like you, and that's really exciting. There's a lot for everyone to learn. I hope that our current leaders listen to this podcast. We'll do everything we can to make sure they do, because I think they really need to hear from people like you, and just the enthusiasm and the action and the wisdom that you have. So yes, thank you very, very much to all of you. It's been a real pleasure, and we would love to have you back on again soon if you'll join us again. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Newism podcast. We hope you enjoyed hearing from these remarkable young social innovators and change makers as much as we did. Please do tweet us on @newismtalks to let us know your thoughts, and rate and review us in the Apple Podcasts app. We'll be back next week with another fascinating conversation. Please join us then.